You found the Mentoring Developers Podcast. This is episode number 51.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Hi, everyone. This is your host, Arsalan Ahmed, and I'm here with you with another exciting, at least for me, exciting episode of Mentoring Developers. Today, my guest is Adriana Castaneda. I'm always amazed to find people, especially women, who go from having a life where they haven't figured things out to finding success and sometimes almost immediate success in a different career, starting over and succeeding beyond their expectations. And Adriana is one of them. She had a career in biology, at least she went to school for biology, but she just happened upon technology and she discovered software development by chance and she ran with it. Now, I found that fascinating. I was really interested to hear more about her journey, to get inspiration from her, because we all need it. I needed to. And it was a wonderful interview. And I'm happy to share it with you guys and girls. So here it is, my interview with Adriana. Hi, everyone. Today, my guest is Adriana Castaneda. How are you, Adriana?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you, Aslan?
I am fantastic. It's so good to have you. I say that a lot. Because it's so good to have all of my guests. All of my guests are wonderful, but you are also wonderful, and you are wonderful in a different way. And the reason I say that is because you did something remarkable in your career. You were going one way, getting a liberal arts education, probably going to go into history or some humanities subject. I don't know. Were you trying to be in the humanities? Were you trying to do something political? I'm not really sure where you were going there. But then just by some accident of history, you found yourself not only a software developer, but a software development instructor. Now, that's something I have never seen before. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so I actually started my career in biology. The idea was to do research, medical research. And come to senior year, my sister, who went to high school in DeVry University, hold on 1 second, sorry. Hey, Greg, can you like stop for a second? Sorry. Okay.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So when she was going to high school, I would actually have to take her to different meetups. And some of those meetups were HTML and CSS classes. And that's kind of where I got started. Before that, the internet was some magical thing that super geniuses created, or so I thought. But once I got into learning how the internet worked and learned actually how to make a small website, that kind of broke down the magic for me. And I was able to realize that this is something that people can do. And so once I graduated from universities, I went into dev bootcamp and I learned back-end as well as front-end technologies there.
Okay. That's really fascinating. So you went from somebody who was not really interested in becoming a software developer. You didn't think that was for you. You didn't think that you had no idea how to be a software developer. You weren't looking to be one. But once you saw it, once you went to these meetups and you saw people talking about it, you're like, this does not sound that hard. It sounds maybe a little bit fun and looks like anybody can do it. So then you're thinking, why do people go to college for this stuff? Right? What do you think about that? You think it's necessary to go to college for this?
So that's actually an interesting topic that I feel like not a lot of people kind of have like those both perspectives on it. So some of my students actually went to college for this and they took a semester of it. They didn't really like it. So then they go to General Assembly, which is a boot camp that I currently teach at. And they like it only because they feel like it teaches them more practical skills in the industry. But I really think it depends on the individual. My sister right now had the privilege to actually go to Dev Bootcamp, and she's currently studying in DePaul University, getting her degree in software development. And from her experience, she also feels like in the college setting, you get to dive deeper into theory behind it. So you actually learn how the computer works. You actually learn the different levels of abstraction. So you realize like, software today was made so that software developers don't really have to worry about binary code in order to talk to the computer versus in bootcamp, you just learn software development in the sense of you learn Ruby and JavaScript instead of binary and Java.
How do you see yourself? If I ask you this question, who is Adriana? How will you describe yourself? Let me help you a little bit. Do you see yourself as outgoing? Are you somebody who is maybe a little bit introverted? Do you see yourself somebody who is really eager to learn? I just want to read every book that you can find. Or are you somebody that takes things slowly? Just help us understand you.
So as far as I go, I think I am more the type of person who is more outgoing and likes to organize things. So I am the type of person to not only participate in the hackathon, but like also try planning one and bringing more people in. And I like helping people. So I do a lot of mentorship too.
That's great. Okay. So for people who don't know what a hackathon is, because I don't want like to throw out terminology that people don't know, even though you know and I know what it is, and a lot of people do, but not everybody does. So let's define in one sentence what a hackathon is and what it isn't.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So a hackathon is, to me, it's an event where a problem is presented and people come together, work in teams to try to solve that problem. And maybe at the end of it, present their solution that they came up with.
Okay. And so when people get together, they're trying to solve a problem that may or may not be a hackathon. Because that's what I did in college. I had a team and we worked in projects and groups, and we would solve a problem in a group and we would get graded as a group, but that was not a hackathon. So in a hackathon, you're basically, the idea is not that important, or you're not given an idea. Am I right here? You pick an idea based on what you are interested in. And if you decide it's not a good idea, you can change the idea. So the concept for the piece of software that you're creating is not perhaps important. The fact is that you come together, you plan it, you execute on it, and then you finish it. Maybe that's more important. What do you think?
So I think it really depends on the hackathon that you're working with. So, for example, I participated at many different hackathons, one of which was called the AEC Hackathon, and it was for the field of construction. So that necessarily, when you think of construction, you don't think of technology, yet you had a bunch of software developers come together and like try to see how you can bring technology into this field of construction. So it was very interesting because, I mean, the problem that was presented was, how do you bring technology into the construction field, which is very outdated as far as how they do things? So for that hackathon, it was particularly important to, come up with like an idea, not necessarily have a completed project, but come up with different ideas so that with more time permitting, they can actually implement these solutions.
Okay. I've been to a few of those, and a lot of them turn into mocked up software and WordPress websites where, okay, this is what it would look like if we had done it. But what we're trying to prove here is that it's a viable product. So yeah, that's fair enough. So what was your first encounter with programming? I know that you went to these meetups, but I don't think you were sitting there coding. So do you remember your first time with writing a program? Or do we even call this programs anymore? People don't call it programming anymore. It's called coding now. Yeah.
So my first time coding was actually for the Dev Bootcamp pre-work. So it was to get into Dev Bootcamp. That's when I had to write my first program.
That was the first time you tried to write a program in an entrance exam?
Yep.
Wow. How did that go?
It was fairly interesting only because, so in order to get into Dev Bootcamp, you have to kind of teach yourself programming first. So I look back at it and it was not elegant at all. it's very possible to learn how to program it. But as far as like writing clean code, I think Dev Bootcamp really helped me there.
Right. I think the first step is to do it any which way you can, and then you polish it. It is just like with anything else. The first clay toy or the first bit of, sandcastle you make, you don't try to make it a masterpiece. You just try to make one that doesn't fall apart immediately, right? And once you have done it a few times, then you'll know, if we do it like this, it actually lasts longer. Maybe we can do things a little bit different, and you learn over time. That I think that this is a problem that we have where we all are always comparing what we produce as, and I'm putting myself, I'm not a new developer, but if I am a new developer, I want to be a developer, well, I will compare perhaps what I produce with something that I see on the internet that I like to use. This is a website. I want to make it exactly like that. And it's hard because lots of hours and years and months and just lots of blood and sweat has gone into those production websites and really cool graphics and whatever else you're interested in. It's not easy. In fact, I'm going to say it's not even possible to make the first version of any website look like the finished article. Obviously, in the modern software development paradigm, we don't want to do that because if you polish your application a lot, that means you probably released it too late. So the reason, and you probably know this, but the reason we like to release early and in a state that is not finished so that we could get feedback to make any adjustments that we need to make, because we're not making it for ourselves. We're making it for others to use. And it's just like, just the other day, we just bought a new house and I was installing new locks. And, when you're screwing the handles in, if you screw one all the way in and then let's say that it takes three screws and you screw one all the way in and it turns out it's not completely aligned, then you're going to have a very hard time putting the others in if the first one is not done right. Right? Or anything like that. If you need to align something, that what you would do normally if you're doing a project at home, you'll screw it in just a little bit. You'll leave a little slack and then you screw in all the others and make sure that it's aligned. Then you carefully tighten the first screw and then you go around, right? That's how you do it normally. This is common sense. But a lot of times in software, we don't think like that. And we say, well, the first version has to be the final version, right? And if it, and it's happened to me. It's funny because I have delivered software a long time ago. I was making and selling this desktop software for kids to play. It was kind of a learning software. And my experience was that people were really shocked if there was something that didn't work as they expected, because they would say, oh, it's broken, you know? So the concept that software always evolves, we know that, is never going to be perfect, is almost never going to be bug-free, which means it will always have quirks. We live with those quirks. What we do is we say, this is acceptable at this point. The first point of delivery, maybe a month after you started, is where it kind of works. If you do things this way and if you don't try to go outside the bounds, it will kind of sort of work. It sort of proves the concept. And you have to use a little bit of your imagination to know that, okay, with the finished product will work this way. It kind of doesn't work right now, but just imagine it does. And that's how you always do it. And in a professional software development environment, we all understand that. In a large corporation or a startup, we all understand that because we do this internally. Usually, we do not expose it to the world. But this is something that new developers, I think, should internalize. You're not going to create a masterpiece the first time around, and it doesn't have to be. All you need to do is to make sure it works. And it doesn't even have to work all the way. It needs to maybe a critical path, or just a little 10% of it that you care about, that works. And make sure that it works according to the needs of the customer or the user. Then you move on to the next 10% and so on, right? Incrementally. So next time you have a problem, you realize, okay, nobody wants it this way. Then you only have to undo the 10%. And it's easy to do. It's much easier to do than trying to rebuild software. And you know how, I mean, so many software projects fail completely, miserably fail, and never actually go live into production. It's actually a fact, and it's unbelievable how much money we throw away. So had to get on my soapbox there a little bit. So that's fantastic. That's your first encounter with programming. But by that time, you already had a bachelor's degree. What was the degree in?
Biology.
Fascinating. And now, why did you choose that major?
So when I was doing research in biology, I actually did an internship with this one doctor who would spend time with witch doctors, and she would collect samples of different plants that the witch doctors had used. And we broke them down organically to see what components were actually useful, to see if we can use it somewhere else. But I realized that there was so much red tape to research that I didn't even know going into it. So with software development, I feel like there's much more freedom in actually creating solutions that are useful in society, that you can just do on your own, and you don't have like all that red tape. You can just write your own code and put it up there for someone to use.
That's right. Software is so critical because it's kind of this malleable, this abstract thing. It's not a thing that you can hold in your hand. It's not a thing that you can build in a factory, right? You don't need factories. These days, we are really concerned that we're losing jobs, or you have a factory that's not producing any output, and you have people who work in that factory. There is no such thing as a traditional factory for software. There is no physical product, right? So this kind of abstract thing lives inside all of the products that we have these days. So that's the fascinating part about software. In every single industry, I mean, literally, I can't think of a single industry on Earth right now that does not have software, not just in its business somewhere, but at the critical path. If you take software out of manufacturing, for instance, if you take software out of farming, if you take software out of electronics, things that we don't really think about as software because they're not websites, but there's software running inside your cell phone that is not the apps. Other than the apps, the actual cell phone is a software. The mobile phone that you have, the calls that you make are not possible through software. So somebody's writing that software. And then you have, you think about farmers, they need weather forecasting. All of that is software. You think about the military, the radars and all their jets and all this. They all have software running inside. Without software, the world would just stop. You know what that means? That means everybody, every single person, every single company, every single employer in this world needs to build and have software. If they don't build it, they buy it. But they need software desperately. So now that probably explains a little bit why there's so much demand. There's just people like you who have no background in software development can just jump right in as long as you can prove to the world that you can get them what they need. It's like a person. Think of it as a heroin addict. A heroin addict. It needs heroin. It doesn't matter where you get it from. Software is like this heroin or crack cocaine, whatever you want to call it. It's this addiction that people have or the companies have. It's a good addiction, but that's what it is. They really need it. They can't live without it. So if you can do it for them, they will hire you. They don't care. Right? I think this is an amazing leveler. So people that were traditionally disadvantaged people of color, people that are older, people that are younger, people are immigrants, people are not immigrants, people who are rural, people who are maybe high school educated, maybe not even. All these people have traditionally been disadvantaged and they have not had the chance of upward mobility. Right? This is what excites me about software development, that this is the only field, the only occupation in this world that has ever existed, in my opinion, where it provides an equal opportunity to people of all different backgrounds and almost everybody. Obviously, you need to be literate, but almost everybody can come in and become somebody important. Now, right now, you went in there and you were interested and you started doing this. Now, you had several paths. You could have, for instance, after you graduated from Dev Bootcamp, you could have perhaps looked for junior development positions, and there are a lot of them, especially for the types of technologies that they teach you at Dev Bootcamp. I think they teach you Ruby, Rails, and JavaScript. Am I right?
Yeah.
Highly in demand. They pay decent. They pay pretty well. Junior developers don't get paid as much as they could, but there are so many of you, right? There's so many of the juniors that there is a lot of supply, very little demand. But as soon as you have a couple of years experience, all of a sudden you're an elite company. So the point is that you have this opportunity as a listener, if you're listening to this podcast right now, and if you're thinking about becoming a software developer, or maybe you just dabble in it and you're not sure if you can hack it, or maybe you have a completely different career and you're kind of okay with it, but you really think that it's not really fulfilling your potential, you should definitely look into this. And this is where I'm so excited to talk to Adriana about, because she did it. I mean, she did it. She did what we want to do. Right. But what's so interesting to me is, and I really want to ask you how your career went after or during your studies at Dev Bootcamp. Okay. So you were at Dev Bootcamp. did you graduate or did you have a job as a software developer before you graduated? I have a feeling that you kind of, I'm looking forward to that answer.
So the way that boot camp works is you don't start interviewing until you graduate. Okay. So I graduated. And after that, I immediately got a job working for a freelance group. And we had to maintain a lot of university websites. So that was interesting. And that's kind of the path that I got to get my feet wet to see like how this is as an actual career. So once I finished with that freelance gig, then I worked at a startup called, it's affiliated with Matter in Chicago, and it's called Health Engine. So there, that was my first software developer position that I had. And then that even introduced me more into working in a company setting and looking at code that's being used by a lot of users versus just a few.
Okay. So the first thing you did was a freelance gig, which is kind of interesting. Interesting that you can do that. In a lot of other fields, you wouldn't have this opportunity. This is definitely an opportunity. I like doing freelancing. I've done that for a while. But this was your first job. You have no experience. Right. Why did they hire you? Or maybe they didn't hire you and it was a short contract, right? So it was, how long was it? Like a month or two?
Yeah, the freelance, it was about 2 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Dev Bootcamp hooked you up, or was that on your
right? Own? Yeah. No, that was through Dev Bootcamp connection.
Okay. So tell me about your interview process for that freelance gig. How did you hear about it? How did the interview process or hiring process go? And how was your first day? I'm assuming you worked from home. Did you work?
Yeah.
Okay.
I worked from home.
That's great. So just walk us through your initiation a little bit.
So for that job, my friend who graduated the class before I did, she actually was the one who got me into that group only because that's how she got started as well. And so it was through her recommendation that I got it. And the interview for that was just to see like what hours I was available and whether or not I would, like how comfortable I felt with JavaScript because it was front end heavy. So once I told them that, yes, I felt comfortable with jQuery, then I think the hardest part was getting started in that sense, only because they had used things that I wasn't even aware of. So for security measures, they actually had to link me to their system using my IP address. And so that's how I was only able to work from home because it was linked to, straight to my IP address and I wasn't able to get into the system from any other place. But it was very interesting because I was in Chicago, but some of my team members were in Poland, actually. So getting used to working on a team with so many remote workers and who are running on different time schedules, that was quite the experience for me.
Yeah, your first day must be overwhelming. I'm assuming that. I mean, so first day you show up, okay, I'm here. I mean, it's not like you're an employee. So if you're an employee, you might go through orientation. You might go through some other, you know, meetings and HR, none of that. Just first day, you need to start billing, right?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So, and you've just been through a boot camp. And I know that it's a good boot camp, but it's still a boot camp. So, and there's just so much you don't know. Right? Tools you don't know about, terminologies you don't know. technologies you don't know. And even if you do know it, I mean, jQuery and JavaScript and so on, you probably don't know it that well. And you're probably thinking, I don't know what I'm doing here. Did you have imposter syndrome?
Oh, definitely. Especially since they were working using PHP. So the first day on the job, yes, it was a definite learning curve because I didn't have that go-to person to go to if I needed help. I had to learn this on my own. And so I had to learn how to start a PHP website on my computer. I had to learn how to actually code in PHP for this job. So it was definitely harder than I expected. When I was going into the job, I'm like, oh, JavaScript, yeah, that's totally fine. PHP, I mean, I thought it was like Ruby, the language that they taught us in Dev Bootcamp.
How wrong you were.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'm actually looking at the code. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, where do I even start? But after like my first website that I did for that job, the rest was okay, because then I was able to like see, okay, so these are the files that I actually need to edit. And this is how I can actually see how I'm doing with this.
You know what I'm really curious about? Every time I start a new project or I'm at a new client or a new job, the first thing that is the hardest for me, there are lots of hard things, but the hardest thing I think is how do I set up my system to be able to run this application? Because it's an existing application. Most of the time you're not starting fresh. So it's an application that runs in a kind of a weird way. You need all these levers to pull on these settings, and that nobody will ever tell you because they don't have any time or whatever. They're not organized. They're not going to tell you. You just got to figure it out. And it needs to run in a certain way in order for you to see how it runs, in order for you to fix bugs, in order for you to add features. But you can't really, you can add it, but you cannot really prove that it works until you run it and you don't know how it runs, right? You don't know how it actually is supposed to function. And that may take hours, at least, you know, for me, just to figure that out. And nobody wants to pay you for that. They just want you to just go fix some bugs. So, so how did you handle that?
So for that, I actually did get some help with one of my freelancing coworkers that I was working with. And he had been on the project longer than I have. So, and he was actually like a pro with PHP development. So I definitely went and solicited help from him. And he was more than happy to help me set up my environment. And so, setting up my environment was definitely new to me, only because I was already like so used to working in a certain type of environment regarding like a certain type of Ruby and Ruby on Rails 4 versus this version of PHP and so on and so forth.
Did it surprise you that the rest of the world doesn't always use Ruby? When you're in boot camp, it's almost a given that you're going to learn Ruby. I don't know why, but Ruby is the only language we learn. It's a beautiful language, but still, the world does not entirely run on Ruby. And was it like a shock? Like, they don't use Ruby? Did that shock you?
So that wasn't as shocking to me. What was shocking to me was, how difficult it can be sometimes setting up your environment, depending on what computer you have, what software you're running on that computer, what your operating system is, and just to like take into account all these variables in order to get something to work. I think that's what shocked me the most.
Yeah, it is hard. Software development is hard. You know, back in the day when I started, it wasn't that hard. It was simple. Usually you had a single command line script that you ran, or it was a simple IDE. Back in the day, it was just, everything was simple. There were not too many things going on. When I started programming, there was no internet. There was no public internet anyway. And so there was no email. You could make your computer do some stuff and print some stuff and draw some circles and make some games and make some noise. And that's all we were thinking about. We didn't even know that there will be a whole another world where computers could talk to each other. And so by the time that happened, we already had several years of computing experience as users and as software developers. So I thought, you know, it prepared us well. When email came around, when we saw it develop, we saw the first websites come out. But for people that are joining the industry right now, or maybe just coming off age in the 2010s, that this decade, I'm a little bit unsure how they handle it, because the world is so different, right? You've never known a world without the internet. You've never known a world without a smartphone. And so I wonder if it makes it harder or if it makes it easier, because right, with the internet, you can Google everything. And if you don't know what to make of a programming error or an exception that you get in your program, just copy and paste it into Google and you'll probably find something. We didn't have any of that. So I just wonder if you think that makes it easier or makes it overwhelming, because of the ease of development that we're actually making more complicated things. What do you think?
So, yeah, I think that's a very interesting point. Right now, I feel like, especially with boot camps, yes, they teach you things like Ruby, which is supposed to be a language that's easy to use only because it's so similar to the English language. And you don't really have to learn the underpinnings of that language. Because it makes it so easy for you to use, then once you actually learn harder things, then it's very easy for you to realize, like, the more you know, the more you realize you know nothing. I guess when I first started learning how to program, especially with Ruby and Ruby on Rails, I thought, oh, this isn't so bad. And then I went a little deeper into what it actually like means to program, and like why Ruby is so easy to use versus like other languages. And that's because Ruby was made in like a higher level of abstraction. So you don't have to worry about writing binary code, and you don't have to worry about writing like very difficult code in order for your computer to understand. And once I realized that, like, oh my gosh, other people did this so that I don't have to worry about it. I mean, this is amazing, but I feel like there's so much that I don't know right at this point.
One thing that we don't have to worry about these days, and this is not because of Ruby or Python, but it's mostly because of Java. And what Java brought about was the fact that now, in almost all of the higher level programming languages that we have, we don't have to worry about managing the computer's memory. Memory is largely solved. It's not solved completely. But for a new developer, somebody who is a little bit younger than me, would be like, what is this memory thing you're talking about? What's the big deal? Well, it's no big deal right now, because your programming environment is managing that, and it's allocating memory for your variables and your objects and deallocating it. You don't have to worry about it. But prior to that, we had to do it ourselves. And that's something that's pretty massive. All right. So I want to ask you about how it was for you to not only be a new developer, a young developer, not only that you are not that experienced, you're also, you're coming from a boot camp, which for a lot of people, and I don't know if you have experienced this, for a lot of people, they sort of dismiss boot camps offhand as like, this is gimmicks and it's not real, right? It's not real education. And a lot of established software developers will say, well, they're people who are just maybe buying a ticket into their secret world, right? Our secret world of software developers. We have this entrance fee that you have to pay. You have to go through the 4 years of college in computer science to do it. A lot of people feel that way. And so there's a little bit of resentment. So you had that. You're also a woman. And I have to say that a lot of times women have it hard. It's not easy. And a lot of times they have it easy. And a lot of times people are good. And sometimes most people are good and some people are not good. And you're the unlucky person to deal with people who are maybe inappropriate towards women in different ways. And I think you know what I mean. So just summing it all up, how did people accept you or not accept you as a valuable member of their team, as a software developer? Did you get the respect that you thought you deserved? Did you get treated fairly? Thoughts?
So I've definitely had like different experiences on that. So I would have to say, like, when I was interviewing for a few jobs, they tended to kind of assume that I wanted like a UX position and like, you know, like a designer position versus, oh, I actually wanted a backend position. There's this one actually experience where it was very new to me in so far as the guy I was interviewing with actually tried hitting on me afterwards.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So even though like I tried staying like positive beforehand, thinking like, oh, you know, this industry is definitely trying to be more accepting of women and la-da-da. And then this happened. I'm like, oh, okay. So there's still like some things that could be improved on. So he actually interviewed me, asked me if I was single, which I was not at the time. I was actually engaged. Told him I was engaged. He continued to text me because he had my number because of security purposes. That's how he had to like let me into the building. So that was very inappropriate. And I shut it down. but it is bizarre how often that actually happened. So, I mean, talking to other women in the industry, it like opened my eyes that like, this still happens quite often. It's not just like this weird case. But I mean, to that negative point, there's also like very positive points. So when I started teaching at General Assembly, they were actually very happy to see that like I was very well versed in being able to teach Ruby and Ruby on Rails, which is what they were looking for in a candidate. And they were even more excited that I was a woman, only because I guess women are still hard to come by in this industry. And they were just very like accepting and made it easy for me to work there.
I think what they're doing is exactly what all employers should be doing, right? Especially if you're an educational company, you are in education, you're hiring teachers, you should look for diversity. You should also look for diversity in your students, right? That's a given. In my opinion, that's how the world should be. But you might be surprised to hear that I know a lot of people and I listen to some podcasts and I hear some kind of offhand remarks. And I know people that I've worked with over the years. I know a lot of good people. And they seem to believe that women get a free ride and maybe minorities and other people that are preferred sometimes over the majority, whatever you want to call it. A lot of times people believe that deserving people get overlooked for non-deserving, underserved people like women, minorities, and people of color and whatever else. So the idea is if merit is the only criteria, then it shouldn't matter. It shouldn't matter what your color is, what your gender is. We don't see color. We don't see gender. We just see qualifications. But that's what I want to say it here. I want to verbalize what needs to be said is we have, as species, we have inherent biases. I have a bias. You have a bias. We all have biases, right? We're not very good people in terms of judging fairly. We're not fair. I think we're not capable of being fair. What we need to do is restrict our urges and restrict ourselves a little bit to essentially make sure that we stay within the bounds. If there are no bounds on us, then we'll have misogyny. Then we will have people who thinks that sexism is normal and because they're just being natural. It becomes an environment where a person who is just like you, a person who looks like you and talks like you, hangs out in the same circles, maybe drinks the same beverage that you drink, or maybe cracks the same joke and laughs at your jokes, maybe that's the right person for you to work with. And it happens usually that it's a person that also looks just like you, right? It's very easy to get into the trap unless we are on the lookout for that and we institutionalize diversity, we institutionalize the idea of having people of different backgrounds within a single team. We make it a goal, a stated goal. Unless you do that, it's not going to happen because we have incumbents, right? So it's just like Congress. If you're an incumbent congressman, you're always going to get reelected because of we have this inertia, right? You're there, so you're going to stay there and more people like you are going to get there. That's just how it is. New people to break in is hard. So what we have to do is just break the mold, start over. And I think companies like General Assembly are doing a great job. So I just want to say that. You have any thoughts on that?
I mean, yeah, I think diversity is definitely important. Only because, I mean, you do need like different perspectives when you're, whether in an educational company or a software development company that has different clients. I mean, I think it's important to just have like a well-rounded perspective on things. That way you can actually like be on the lookout for different problems. For example, I mean, you have that like classic example with the Apple store and how when they were developing a store, they didn't have any women on the team and they made glass stairs. So when the unveiling happened, you have these glass stairs and then you have women wearing skirts and dresses walking on those glass stairs. So lo and behold, they didn't like that. So yeah, just having like one woman on that team probably would have helped. So I mean, yeah, but there's a bunch of times where diversity helps.
Yeah, definitely makes for better products. If the producers or the creators of any kind of creative work, if they have representation from their audience, then there is a good chance that they will serve their audience better. And that same thing that goes for software. And I've heard with other apps that Apple has built, have had this problem as well. But also, imagine if you're making a television serial, or if you're making a movie that you want everybody to watch, but the people who create this belong to a very narrow group of people. Maybe, I don't want to pick on any group, but let's say that it's a single ethnicity and a single language and a single background, single age range. You're going to produce a movie that's going to appeal to that group, perhaps, but not to others, which doesn't make business sense. So it helps in every context, and especially in software, because software affects everybody else. Okay, so on to the next topic. I really am really fascinated the fact that you graduated from a boot camp. Then after that, you worked for a little bit. My impression is that you worked for about a year, not more than that, over both these jobs. Is that right?
Yeah.
And after that, you became an instructor at General Assembly, which is a very reputable boot camp. Now, first of all, did you think you were qualified for that? And that's a pretty tough question, but I think you can handle it. So did you think you were qualified?
So at that point, I thought I was qualified enough. They were really looking for a candidate to teach Ruby and Ruby on Rails. But General Assembly, their boot camp is different than Dev Boot Camp in the sense that Dev Boot Camp goes really into depth with Ruby and Ruby on Rails and JavaScript. General Assembly touches upon different stacks. So they teach Sinatra, they teach the mean stack, and they teach Ruby on Rails in the same time span that Dev Boot Camp taught us Ruby and Ruby on Rails. So I was definitely nervous, though, being straight out of a boot camp and with very little experience, like actually working in the industry. But my mentor for my position in the startup company, he actually knew that I was looking for a different position, and he recommended me to General Assembly because he had taught there previously. And so I just took a chance and I applied, and I was very happy when I received the news that I did get it.
It's amazing. I think it's exciting for you, but also it just shows that General Assembly is, as its proverbial head, at its right place, because they understand, I think, the point. If I'm General Assembly, I would want to hire you because you are fresh out of a boot camp and you had a little bit of experience. So you can relate to people who are just getting into a boot camp, right?
Yeah.
And a person who has many years of experience may not even remember the first things that they stumbled upon or the first hurdles that they came across and how they overcame it. But you do. So in that sense, you are actually a better candidate than them. That's the kind of answer that I had in mind, but I wanted you I wanted to see if you were thinking that. I think that's probably what they were thinking. And that's the first thing, because you're not producing papers on new inventions, right? Or new constructs in Ruby, and you're not inventing anything. All you're doing is explaining and helping students. So you have empathy. You are there for the students, and that's great. Now, okay, so tell me a little bit about that experience, and how long have you been doing it, a year or so?
Yeah. So I've been with General Assembly for a year.
Okay, so you're teaching Ruby and Ruby on Rails. Are you also teaching Python?
So actually, for General Assembly, I'm not, but I am mentoring someone for Chippy, so the Chicago Python group here in Chicago, and they're I'm mentoring someone using Python.
Seriously, you guys call it Chippy?
Chippy.
I would have called it Shy Pie, but okay. Wow, really? Okay. Well, that's good to know. All right, but okay. So I'm not sure what to make of this. So in about 2 years, maybe 2.5 years, that's the experience you've had from the time you joined Dev Bootcamp to now. You have not only learned JavaScript and jQuery and all that stuff, but you've learned Ruby and Ruby on Rails, and you have learned PHP. So far, that's what I know, and Python, and who knows, maybe Django. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, so I think that's...
How do you do that again?
Like, so that came with being an instructor at General Assembly. So even though they brought me on, yes, because I was able to relate to the students and teach them Ruby and Ruby on Rails, I also had to help them learn MemeStack and React, which working for General Assembly really just threw me in that field, and I had to learn it really quickly in order to be able to help the students out. So that really helped me learn different languages easily. So once you're able to learn how to learn, then it becomes easier to pick things up. So I actually not only picked up Node and Python, I actually picked up Java and C programming. Yeah.
You're kidding me.
Nope.
All right. So there'll be a test at the end of this interview. Just kidding. No, actually I'm not. I am kidding. All right. So that's great. So, okay, tell us quickly a little bit about the different languages. Now, it's an interesting question. I don't generally ask this question. But since you have learned a little bit of a lot of stuff, which is a little bit like me, to be honest, C and Java and PHP and, of course, JavaScript and Node, and then you've done Ruby and all this other stuff, Python. Why would somebody pick one language over the other? I mean, answer it the way you like, but based on your experience and what you've seen for a new developer, maybe somebody who's starting out and has time on their hand, what should they pick and why?
So I really think it depends on what you're trying to make. So each different technology has its pros and its cons. It really depends on what you're looking to make and how your idea of maintainability. So obviously I'm not going to recommend you pick the newest technology that not a lot of people use and that just came out. You want to look for something that's going to suit your needs and be there in the future if you're planning on carrying your project long term. I actually, once I learned the MemeStack, I'm definitely leaning towards that more if I ever were to make my projects, only because I feel, especially now with React being the new technology, I think that it's a lot faster than Rails. And you do have that support built into that system. So if you use that technology, then it's going to be there for a good while, I'm assuming.
Okay, so you learned React, and I've asked this question from to others, but I want to ask you, how do you learn it? I mean, okay, I'm imagining that in General Assembly, you have a manual or some quick way that you can say, well, do this and this and this, and then now you're good to go. Or I could be completely wrong, and you basically just found your own path. As an example, how did you learn React?
So React, me and some team members wanted to incorporate it into the curriculum. So we worked together to tackle React together. And what that means is go to the React website and read the documentation and see that tutorial on how to get started. And then once we did that, and once we kind of got the idea of oh, okay, so this is how you write React code, then we kind of messed around with it and tried building things to see what we can and what we can't do.
Okay. So from the time that you decided, you started looking at React to the time that you felt comfortable teaching it or you felt comfortable building a small app, how long was that? How many days or weeks or hours?
So I guess like learning the syntax, that was probably a week to get used to and like actually like read about. And then to actually build things, we worked day to day on it for about like 3 weeks. Because I mean, there is a lot you can do with it.
Okay. So about a month. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I think it gives people an idea of picking up a new technology. Like it doesn't have to be React because there's so many other JavaScript frameworks out there and they're coming out all the time. Angular 3 is coming, folks. So, so ditch all your Angular 1 and 2 projects and jump on to Angular 3. Wait.
I know. And now we're on Rails 5.
Yeah. Rails 5 and Rails is moving along, but obviously it's stabilized and it's a completely different type of framework. So it's not really apples and oranges. But okay, so I think this has been a fantastic interview. We're almost at an hour and we need to wrap up. But I want to ask you, if you could start over, would you do anything differently now that you know? Would you go back and get your computer science degree? Would you say all that liberal arts education, that's crap, we don't want that? Or would you say, well, I should have done this better? What do you think?
So going back, I think I would go back and get my degree in computer science, only because I'm the type of person to try learning everything that has to do with the field that I'm in. I mean, now that my sister's like actually going to college for it, me and her, we just like have conversations on like what she's learning and like I try learning from her. and I do find value in learning the deep details of things, especially if like you're going to be using different languages in your software development career, that way, like, you have this good understanding on how everything works and why it's, you can appreciate it, why it's so easy for you to actually make a website now. So, yeah, I would definitely go back and get my degree in computer science.
All right. So, if I'm a new developer right now, or maybe I'm in high school right now, or maybe I'm a single mother of two kids and I'm thinking I could do better with my life. What advice would you give me to become a developer?
So my greatest advice, I think, is dabble with it first. So go to Code Academy and take some courses there. It's free. There's nothing to lose if you try doing Code Academy, just to see how you like it. Try going to meetups, meeting people, get their opinions on it. And if you're truly looking into getting into this field, there are people who are willing to help you. We want diversity, so we are more than happy to help out if you just reach out to us.
And if I'm an employer, hiring manager, perhaps I need to build a new team or augment my current team, and I'm looking to hire new developers, what's your advice for me?
So if you are looking to hire new developers, I would say go to your computer science school, go to see like what the students are learning there, go visit different boot camps, see what they're learning and see what projects they're building. Just so you have like a better sense of what's being taught in order to prepare students for the industry. And based on that, you can see like what, where your interests align with who's teaching what.
I think that on behalf of my audience, I can say we're really proud of you, Adriana, that not only that you started on this journey, you thrived on it, and you did it. And it's not everybody gets to do the thing they love, and not everybody gets to the finish line. A lot of people drop out. You didn't. I'm sure you went through some hardship. It's not easy. Nothing in this life that's worth anything is easy. But when you stick with it, oftentimes you get success. And so just looking at you, you are an inspiration to my audience, an inspiration to me to keep learning. I need to learn React. So I just am so happy that you gave us the opportunity to talk to you. Do you have any last words, any words of advice, or also let us know how people can get in touch with you if they want to ask you a question?
Participate in hackathons. They happen really frequently. A lot of times there are prizes. You don't have to be a software developer in order to participate most of the time. So my recommendation is look for hackathons, see how you can be of some use. That way you can actually work with someone in the field. And yeah, feel free to reach out to me by email or on Twitter. My email address is adriana.lcs316@gmail.com. That's the one that I check most often. So go ahead. If you're interested, reach out.
Awesome. So that's going to be hard for you to make a note of if you're driving or if you're doing something dangerous, to just keep doing what you're doing and go to the website for this episode. Is going to be, I believe, episode 51. So very easy. All you have to do is go to mentoringdevelopers.com/episode51. And we'll put all the notes, all the transcript there, and also show notes, links, and ways to contact Adriana and ways to contact me. You can email me at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. Also, another thing I want to mention is mentoringdevelopers.com/list is where you can go and sign up for my email list and ask me questions. And I'm writing some emails right now about salaries. How much salary can you expect? Because that was one of the problems I had, one of the questions I had. Nobody would ever answer an honest answer, not a salary.com aggregate answer, but a reality check. How much money can I make if I live in the northeast of the US, if I live in a small city in the Midwest? I mean, I have an idea because I've lived in a lot of different places, and I have a perspective on this. Obviously, it's not scientific, it's anecdotal, but I think that will be valuable. So I'm writing that. I'm going to send it out to my list. So go ahead and sign up if you are interested in that. And if you send me a message, if you can't somehow contact Adriana, send me a message. I'll forward it on. So happy to have you here. And we're going to have to say goodbye now. But hopefully we will see you again, Adriana.
Thank you so much, Arslan, for having me on.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed the show. You can read the highlights and show notes with links on mentoringdevelopers.com/episode and the number of the episode. For example, mentoringdevelopers.com/episode10 or /episode25 and so on. Let me know what you think about this episode. If you'd like to ask a question or if you have a comment, you can email me at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. Oh, and one more thing. I really want you to be part of the show, even if you are a little shy. So go ahead and type mentoringdevelopers.com/join in your web browser. This will open a Google form where you can tell me what topics interest you and what dates and times you're available for about an hour or so. Everyone is welcome, and I would be thrilled to get a chance to talk to you. I'm really looking forward to hearing from you at mentoringdevelopers.com/join.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.